Good morning, everyone. My name is Kaku. I'm a priest and assistant teacher here at the Village Zendo. And I'm very pleased to be here this morning. And I like our little group. And, you know, it's kind of like getting an unexpected day off when you only have half a day for a Zazenkai. And so, you know, there's something in us, the little kid, that, you know, all of a sudden there's no school for the day. We get a little charge out of that. And so all the more reason for us to really invest our energy and attention for the few hours that we have here this morning. So I would like to read part of a chapter of a book called Transmission of the Light, which tells the story of all of our male ancestors. And as with so many other things, the stories of the women ancestors are told in a different place at a different time, because they were like, oh, there's women in the world, and they have a history too. But that's not the story for today. So this is about Buddha Nandi. When Buddha Nandi met the Buddhist master Vasumitra, he said to him, I have come to discuss meaning with you. Vasumitra said, good man, discussion is not meaning. Meaning is not discussion. If you try to discuss meaning, ultimately it is not a meaningful discussion. Well, that should shut him up, right? But Buddha Nandi knew that Vasumitra's doctrine was supreme, and he realized the principle of the uncreated. Buddha Nandi was from the state of Kamala. His surname was Gautama. He was extremely eloquent and intelligent. During his teaching travels, Vasumitra came to Kamala and widely carried out the work of enlightenment. Buddha Nandi declared to him, my name is Buddha Nandi, and I want to discuss meaning with you. Vasumitra said, good man, discussion is not meaning. Meaning is not discussion. Really true meaning cannot be discussed, and true discussion does not carry any doctrine. Well, perhaps my life would have been different if I had read this or heard about it some 50 years ago. But as it turns out, I was obsessed with the question of the meaning of life. As a teenager, I found a compatriot who was also concerned about the meaning of life. And on our camping trips with several other people, we would be the ones staying up late discussing the meaning of purpose of life. Aided by a few beers or scotch or, you know, vodka or whatever happened to be around at the time, we had very penetrating discussions. We just couldn't remember them the next morning. So we had to continue the discussions. Well, my pursuit of the meaning and purpose of life got me into college, and therefore I majored in philosophy. And after 4 years, I learned that the meaning of the question of meaning is not in meaning, but that it's in the meaning of relationships. And that my concern about the meaning and purpose of life was in fact very much related to one of the most important relationships in my life, namely my brother, my relationship with my brother, who at shortly after birth had cerebral palsy and never walked and learned to talk rather well. But he remained a question for me. You know, like as a teenager, the question is this: can I go to the beach without my brother? I was living in Florida. And what about my brother not being able to walk, not being able to swim, not being able to do a whole lot of things that I could do? And so I went from the question of meaning as some abstract philosophical read the books thing to the question of the heart and to how love is possible in a world where there's so much suffering. And so what's the relationship between suffering and love? And how is it that sometimes suffering squelches the heart's capacity to love, to give it or to receive it? So, you know, roll forward a few years and I began studying psychology. So I was also, from a very early age, I was a very religious child, and I was raised as a fundamentalist Christian. And that did not survive college, but I still carried that question with me to seminary. And so the question of meaning has been, as it were, the thread that links together the disparate aspects of my own life. So from the question of meaning to the question of suffering and the question of lovability. I also spent a very, very long time trying to come to terms with my sexuality, and that added more fuel to the fire, you might say, or more wood to burn or something like that. Because that seemed to impact this issue of love and the capacity to love and to have your love acknowledged and affirmed and supported in the world. So all of a sudden, you know, my whole, everything in life began to open up as questions. One question leads to another. So it's absolutely true that, as Vasumitra says, discussion is not meaning and meaning is not discussion. But that's only if you keep it to the level of the intellectual and the superficial and the academic. But if you take a question like, what's the meaning of your life, and you begin to follow the threads, then all of a sudden you find yourself linked together with not only more questions, but also more people. You discover communities of other people who struggled with the question. Communities, for example, of families where someone is disabled. Communities of someone who doesn't really accept an orthodox position on any particular given religion. Communities of people who have suffered because other people have not been able to love. And so the suffering gets, you know, passed on and passed on. So actually the question of meaning then is, can be for us an entry into the unfathomable and infinite life that we actually live. And also an opening to feeling in so many ways how we are similar to other people that we didn't even think of as similar to us by our common experiences of many different kinds of suffering, but we're all related in some way or not to some form of suffering. So to ask the question of the meaning of life is a dangerous and revolutionary question, in fact. It's imperative for some of us to see what the question is about, because it's about our life. It's about what to do with your life if you don't go for an MBA, or maybe even if you do. It's about what you're going to do with this one precious opportunity that will not come again in your lifetime. What are you going to do with that? So we pursue the question in different ways and we answer it in different ways. And it leads to another aspect of my life that I discovered as an early teenager. When we first moved to Florida from the Midwest, I was going to about my 10th school in 8 grades, and I was once again meeting people who were different and strange and I'd never met before. And, you know, by that point, you'd think I'd become adept, but instead it was rather messy and clumsy, and I always wondered every time I walked into a new schoolroom, would anybody like me? You know, who are these people? And you know, I had just left all the friends that I'd just ever made in my whole life and gone to this strange place called Florida. And I noticed how a lot of people talked a lot. Whether, you know, boys or girls, they seemed to talk a lot. And so I thought, well, maybe if I learn to talk a lot, you know, I'll connect and, you know, people will like me. But then it didn't seem quite right for me because I didn't know how to talk a lot. I was more a quiet type. And in fact, I remember the day and the place exactly. I was 13 and in this small town in Florida, and there was this guy who was like 15, 16, you know, about 3 years older than me. And I knew that he was very popular in high school. And I remember we were playing basketball on the sand. Now, if you've ever dribbled the basketball on sand, you know, it's not exactly the most fetching thing. But that's what we did. We were in Florida. And so I watched him, you know, and with the friends around, and everybody liked him. His name was Steve Darvill. And I thought, you know, he doesn't say much. He just kind of lets things happen, and people love him. So maybe I got a chance. And so anyway, that was my decision to be an introvert, if it's ever decided. And it avoids a whole lot of competitions on one level. But anyway, the question of the meaning of life is about the heart. And how do you negotiate relationships that will help you become who you are? That's really, when you ask the question of meaning, that's what that's about, is how do you live in this world in a way that you have relationships that support you in being your true self rather than supporting you in being a false self, being what other people think you should be or you think they want you to be. How do you cultivate relationships like that? So, jumping ahead, of course, that's what we're here for. The Sangha is the place where we're looking for others to share our our lives together and hopefully support each other in overcoming the barriers that always pop up in our pursuit of our true self. That's why we're here today. Or at least it's one way of talking about why we're here. So Buddha Nandi went on. He says, really true meaning cannot be discussed, and true discussion does not carry any doctrine. Therefore, when there is discussion and doctrine, this is not meaningful discussion. Even so, the Buddha does not have two kinds of speech. Therefore, seeing the Buddha's body is witnessing the Buddha's tongue. So even if you say that mind and environment are non-dual, still this is not true discussion. Thus, even if you say there is nothing to say and no principle to reveal, this still does not communicate any meaning. Even if you say nature is reality and mind is absolute, what philosophy is this? And even if you say awareness and objects are both forgotten, still this is not a true statement. Even if awareness and objects are not forgotten, neither is this meaningful. So if you say guest and host, say one and the same, this is increasingly meaningless discussion. So what's left? Shut our mouths? That won't last very long. When you arrive here, even to speak of Great Manjushri's speechless non-explanation is not really a true exposition. And even though Vimalakirti stayed silent on his chair, this was not meaningful discussion either. At this point, even Manjushri misapprehended, and Vimalakirti still said wrong. Needless to say, Shariputra, foremost among Buddha's disciples in wisdom, and Moggallana, foremost in extraordinary powers, had not yet even dreamed of seeing the meaning of this, like people born blind who had never seen colors. So we're like looking for something that we don't know about because we've never seen it. The question of meaning is our search for this something that is hard to put into words. So the talk goes on about how impossible it is to formulate a statement about meaning that would be true, because it has all kinds of variations that are not true. And so he says, do not seek in emptiness, do not seek in form. How much less should you seek in Buddhas and Zen masters? Wow. It's kind of like give up already. Where can you go with that? So we're in a quandary. It would seem that he's brought us to, you know, the place of hopelessness. Therefore, you should not understand life and death as empty delusions either, nor should you understand them as true reality. If you understand as empty falsehood or true reality, both of these understandings are wrong when you reach here. Therefore, you must search carefully, thoroughly, before you will get it. So he's talking about true reality and our tendency to have words like that, true reality or empty falsehood. And of course, what have we come up with nowadays? Alternative facts. So true reality, empty falsehood, alternative facts. Oy, oy, oy. Where do we go? Search carefully and thoroughly before you will get it, he says. Do not proudly pretend to emptiness or absolute and think that you are in the realm of suchness. So this morning, walking to the train to come here, I was noticing puddles of water that had gathered in the street as I was walking. And these puddles were getting raindrops. you know, just plunk, 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 plunk. And I said, oh, how beautiful. And then I saw the red, pink, blue, and violet of oil on another puddle. And I thought of the cars that left their mark. And I thought of blight and stain and pollution and exhaust gases and environmental issues. And suddenly there was no beauty in what I was looking at all. Because I was carried away by my own associations to the mental bank of devastation. And a car honked just in time to stop me from stepping in front of it. And I broke my reverie, my trance, as it were, about beautiful versus ugly, and looked both ways before crossing the street. That's about it. That's about all there is to say. But we do go on, because Dongshan has something to say. Zen Master Dongshan suddenly became a peer of myriad things and expounded the Dharma with his whole body. Yet something was still not right. Because of this, Yunyan reminded him, this matter should be taken up carefully, this matter of meaning in your life. Thus, he still had doubts remaining. Taking leave of Yunyan to go elsewhere, as he crossed the river, he saw his reflection and immediately realized this matter. Thereupon, he composed a verse. Do not seek from another, or you will be estranged from self. Do not seek from another, or you will be estranged from self. So instead of talking with each other or asking each other, is this, oh, it's falling down?
No, it's... doing a lot of that. I'm sorry.
Okay, maybe I'm talking too much into it? Or?
I don't know what you're doing. It's okay. Thank you.
Okay, yes, thank you. So, do not seek from another, or you will be estranged from self. That also is why we're here, to look inside ourselves. Rather than going around looking to someone else for the answer. So he says, I now go on alone, finding I meet it everywhere. It now is I. I now am not it. One should understand in this way to merge with suchness as is. Well, there's a lot of language in here that is, what should we say? You know, it's new. The use of words that are familiar to you, but the way in which they're used maybe are a little bit hard to make sense of. So it now is I now am not it. One should understand in this way. Who are you beyond being however you define yourself? After all of the meanings that you give to your life are exhausted, what's left? After you add up all of the things that you... all of the things that you have thought were important about your identity, what's left? We search for who we are, but where do we look? What is the place where there is no past and present or future to talk about, no delusion or enlightenment to discuss? When you penetrate in this way, there are no walls in the 10 directions, and no gates in the four quarters. So much for Trump's walls. When you penetrate in this way, when you find what's real after everything that you think of has been exhausted, when you find yourself, this moment, the bell, the squeaks of chairs, the rain, when you find yourself just here, there's nowhere else to go. There's no one else to be. And every time you put words to it, it's kind of like taking yourself away from it. So we sit here and we're trying to find that place within us where there's no present, no past, no future. But there's something. It doesn't even need to be talked about. There are no walls in the 10 directions, no gates in the four quarters. Everywhere is free and clear, uncovered and pure. Bogushu just brought me a cup of tea. Everywhere is free and clear. The rain falls. Here we are, sitting with each other. So, the question of meaning is a question of our own awakening to something we can't quite put words to. It's about being awake to what is wherever we find it, and especially to be careful walking in front of cars or, you know, stepping down sidewalks, and to be in that way of being so that we can simply be present to what is. So, this issue of Donald Trump has captured the imagination and the mind of many of us, and many of us have many reactions to this phenomenon. And if we think about just to what extent many of us have gotten caught up in reactions to this phenomenon. And by the way, it doesn't matter whether you're pro or con. Getting caught up is the issue. Because everybody's caught up at this point, in a certain kind of agita. So where are we when we're caught up in that agita? And how do we clear a space inside to find our own rest and our own goodness, our own sense of life is good? How do we maintain a sense of that rather than being carried away by this current form of illusion, as if this one person were the center of the universe? How do we maintain a perspective that acknowledges reality on whatever levels it occurs to us, and still keep that space within us that does not know walls, that does not have anything except gates, everything being an entry into something else? That's what meaning is. It's searching for the connections of things, searching for how I'm related to you, and you are related to me, and we are related to other people that may not even be born yet or that are already dead. To see the whole and find ourselves in that whole that is so vast and so cosmic and just simply is what it is. We were born on a certain day, certain time, and someday we will all die in a certain place and in a certain time. And we are yet still part of this whole fantastic, magnificent, wondrous, never-ending, fabulous thing we call life. Isn't that great?